Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestling. Today we're going to be doing The Edge of Destruction, the third serial of the First Doctor. And we have a special guest with us. Introduce yourself, guest.
Wait, what? Okay, yes.
You're not going to introduce him? That feels rude.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, I feel like the way, from the podcasts that I have heard, the host usually does the introducing, you know?
Okay. Well, with us today, do you want to introduce him?
No.
Okay. With us today is...
I can leave.
No, don't leave. Stay, because then we don't have anything to talk about. We're entirely relying on you to provide the content for this episode.
Oh, that's not a good idea. That is not a good idea.
Anyway, the person we are badly introducing is Chris Cherry.
Hi.
He's our friend. He was at our wedding. He's really cool.
He also knows much more about Classic Who than we do.
His Tumblr is very Classic Who-y. TrueStoriesAboutMe.tumblr.com. So, okay, now, you say stuff about yourself.
Okay, I assume related to Doctor Who and not just, like, about myself.
Either way.
Do both.
Okay.
Well, I'm a Libra. No, I don't know. I am probably the biggest Doctor Who nerd of anyone that I know personally. I think that's a comfortable thing to say. There are people that are online that I have talked to that are bigger Doctor Who nerds than me, but in terms of people that I have met in MeatSpace, I am the biggest Doctor Who nerd.
Well, I don't know, because you've met my Uncle Tim, albeit briefly, at the wedding, and he's been a fan since 4 was airing.
Yeah, but let's put us in a room.
I would like to. I plan to at some point. We'll record it and put it on the podcast.
So, like, how much knowledge of Who do you have? I mean, how much have you seen and et cetera?
I mean, I've seen, like, I was thinking for this, and what I should have done was gone and actually, like, looked at what percentage of Classic Who I have seen. But it's at least half, probably 2/3. It's not all, but, like, yeah, I'd say it's at least half.
We should make him do what we had to do, which was go through all of the doctors and what we know.
Right.
It would probably take too long, so maybe like a Cliff Notes version.
Like, what, all the things that I know about all the doctors?
It's a lot, Tony.
I guess, like, that would be the whole podcast.
Let's do this a different way. Is there any deficiencies you have? Is there any particular doctor?
What don't you know?
Yeah, what, is there any, like, area that you're a little rough on?
What don't I know? What area am I a little rough on? Like, I haven't seen any of the reconstructions, so I haven't seen, there's a lot of two that I haven't seen because it doesn't exist, but the two that I have seen, I have seen, like, multiple times. Like, I've watched, like, The Tomb of the Cybermen and Enemy of the World and The Mind Robber and all that. I've watched them many times. So it's a weird thing where, like, I've probably seen the least of two, but the two that I've seen a lot.
So why haven't you watched Reconstructions?
Because, like, I didn't know if I had the patience for it. I mean, I probably would, but, like, it was just like, I don't know, I wanted to see things. I was like,
that's weird to me because you listen to the Big Finish audio dramas, and I imagine that it would be kind of similar.
It actually would be, and I probably would. I think, like, now, like, actually listening to Big Finish means that I could go watch the Reconstruct. I think before I listened to Big Finish, I wouldn't be able to have patience for Reconstructions, but now that I have, that would be no problem. Like, I think it's just a thing that I haven't gone back yet. And it's also, like, just because there's so much Classic Who, it just became the thing. It's like, as much as I love two, and I love two to death, it was like this thing of, like, well, I could watch one that's just pictures, or I could watch one that isn't just pictures. And so I just would do the ones that aren't just pictures. And I remember, like, I know how the Reconstructions work, because when they released The Web of Fear, I think at least one of those episodes, maybe two of those episodes were Reconstructions. And so that was, like, my first taste of how Reconstructions work. And I was like, it's not that bad, but it is a little frustrating.
So, because I've actually seen two different types of Reconstructions. I mean, I don't know who does what, but I've seen the ones where you have pictures and then there's, like, little text crawls that sort of explain what you're not seeing. And then I've seen some where they've taken, BBC has released them on audio CDs or whatever, and they use that as narration. There's, like, narration in between, and it's not the text crawls, and I actually prefer that because I'd rather someone tell me what's going on rather than try to read it on the screen while I hear people stumbling around and knocking stuff over.
Falling down.
I've never, like, encountered that, actually. That does seem like it would be better. But yeah, that's not a thing that I'm familiar with. I thought you were going to talk about, like, the ones where they were partially reconstructed, but with animation.
Oh, yeah. I've seen bits of those. I don't know. Those seem weird to me. I don't know why.
Those are a bit weird. It's the animation. It's just...
Seems like it would be the most watchable.
It does.
What kind of animation is it?
It's not very good.
Well, it's... Yeah.
It's really bad.
It's not great.
It's,
It's like that one,
Oh, yeah, it's like that one, 10 episode.
With Martha?
Yeah, the, what was it called? All I can remember is the second one, which was Dreamland.
I don't know, but the animation for it was awful.
Yeah, the animation like for that? Both of them were awful. The 2D one and the 3D one.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, it was... They're like that.
Oh, why did they do 3D? They did not have the time or the talent. It was bad. It was bad.
Doesn't that describe Doctor Who? Like, why did they do this? Well, they didn't have, like, the time or, like, and not the talent, but they didn't really have the means to do this, but they did it anyway.
There's so much and what little of Classic Who that we've seen where I'm like, I don't understand the idea that's trying to be expressed. Like, everyone seems frightened, but I don't know what happened.
Like in Edge of Destruction. Now, there's a really one that I'm thinking of right now. But
yeah, we should probably talk about that or something.
Right. Yeah.
I was just going to say,
like in the last serial, the Daleks, when they're just like, look at we're talking about stuff and pointing it off screen. That sort of thing. Anyway, yeah, let's get to it. Let's talk about The Edge of Destruction, which is two episodes. The Edge of Destruction and The Brink of Disaster aired from February 8th, 1964 to February 15th, 1964. Not a long one.
No, it's quite short.
Literally.
I'm pretty sure it's probably not the shortest one we'll have because I believe there's the Dalek cutaway in season 3. Which is one episode.
Wait, what?
In season 3, there was one episode that was like just, it doesn't have the Doctor in it, doesn't have anybody in it. And then.
Doesn't have anyone?
Yeah, none of the like main cast.
Oh.
And it was basically just a prequel to the Daleks Master Plan. And it apparently confused a lot of people because they didn't immediately do the Daleks Master Plan after that episode. They set it up and then they did this other serial and then they went to the Daleks Master Plan and picked it back up. And everybody's like, what was this weird episode we just watched? And they're not talking about it at all in this next serial. But we'll get to that in season 3.
That actually I did not know. And now that I think about it, when we talk about like which Doctor is my biggest blind spot, it actually probably is the first Doctor.
And he's the biggest, like, non-blind spot I have.
which I think is sort of interesting. Like, because that, like, knowledge kind of escaped me. I don't think I knew that. And then so, like, you just right now, like, you out Doctor Who nerded me.
Ha!
After, like, I gave a
big speech. Suck it, Jerry!
After I gave a big speech, too.
We haven't even started talking about the episode yet.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like the first Doctor, I mean, I don't think it's the first episode without the Doctor, but it's like the first Doctor Light episode entirely sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because he's not in it. I mean, the Doctor's not in some episodes, but he's in at least every serial, but there's episodes within serials that he's like, oh, I've knocked my head out and I'm going to go take a vacation. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about Edge of Destruction, Brink of Disaster, because we're not.
Yeah.
What happens in the Edge of Destruction, Joe? Tell us.
I'm not entirely certain. It's a bottle episode.
It's the best episode so far.
It definitely has an interesting tone.
I still don't understand why anything happened. It was great.
They try to explain what happened, and then some of it makes sense. And then some of it you're still like, but wait, why that?
But then why did all this other weird stuff happen?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Basically, at the end of, what was the last?
The Daleks, the end of the last episode.
Everyone falls over.
Yeah, everyone, like, they're flying away, and the ship goes, and everybody falls over. Ian comfortably lands in a chair.
That's what happens when we need conflict, and we don't know what it's supposed to be. Everyone falls over.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I assume there was some kind of crash. Because everyone just suddenly lost the ability to stand.
Though everybody seems to, or at least the Doctor and Susan are like, no, it can't be a crash! There's no way it could be a crash. It's not a crash. Yeah, they said that like multiple times, but clearly they've stopped.
Yes.
They've stopped violently.
And fell down. Everybody except Barbara. Barbara seems all right.
I was really excited when that happened. Because Barbara wakes up first, and I'm like, yes, this is going to be a good episode.
And it she's wearing the thaw pants.
She is wearing thaw pants, and she totally got laid in the last episode.
Yeah, that definitely happened. She is straight up wearing her ex-lover's pants.
So, like, she walk ashamed it back to the TARDIS?
No, I don't think she walk ashamed it. She strutted away with
She's
pride.
Trapped.
Yeah.
She walked.
Because she kissed him and then left. She left him. So he did the walk of shame back on Skaro.
Yeah, he stand of shame is what he did.
So the TARDIS
doesn't crash. It just violently stops. Yes. And no one knows why. And Susan starts acting
weirder than usual.
Straight up tries to stab Barbara.
With scissors.
Yeah. And just like creepily has the scissors the whole time.
She does. Meanwhile, Ian is like acting like Ian, but more so.
He becomes so goofball.
He really does.
The thing about Ian in this episode is that it's like everyone wakes up and they kind of have amnesia for like the first couple of minutes.
Except Barb. Barbara doesn't have.
Well, she does. She sees Ian sitting in the chair and she's like, Ian?
Yeah.
And she says his name like it's a question, but like she gets back faster than everyone else. That's the important part.
Right.
But like I think everyone's very fuzzy and like acting very strange, and I think.
Well, except for the doctor's still passed out. And oh, and Ian is like, let's check on the doctor, this guy, who he apparently doesn't know. And he's like, his heart seems fine.
Just the one.
Which clearly says that Ian has no idea what he's talking about.
But no, I think the whole reason why Ian is so goofy is because he is so fuzzy. And he's like, oh, I am very ill, but I am still going to be in control of this situation and help everyone right after I throw up.
Yes. I remember watching it again, like his whole performance is like, you know when you walk into a room and you realize that you forgot why you walked into the room and you're just like, huh. Like that's his whole performance in the episode. Is that emotion.
It is. He doesn't, he has no idea what's happening or why, but he's going to fix it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Susan just decides to scream a lot and act odd and make interesting acting choices.
I was like the most interested in her in this episode. Like when she was being like, the whole thing is that there's like a part of the episode where they're like, something might have gotten in the ship. We don't know. The doors keep opening and closing for some reason. So maybe there's something in the ship. And like, when she's acting like she might be possessed, it is like the most interesting she's ever been.
This is very true.
I love that scene where like, Ian's like, I'll go get water. And he goes and gets the water and he comes back in and it just pans over and she's standing on the hideaway bed with like like scissors. And he just stares at her like, what's up? And then she just starts stabbing the bed, and Ian does nothing.
Was it Ian or is it Barbara?
It was Ian.
Oh.
It is Ian. Like
she later.
Yeah.
They both get scissored.
They both get.
So do you have any thoughts on what we've covered so far?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Like, I'm Susan, I'm not the biggest fan of Susan, but like, she is, doing the most interesting things in this episode. She plays like this possessed person really well. It says this whole weird energy. I love at one point, like, she touches the TARDIS console and then faints in the most amazing way possible. Or, like, she touches it and then, like, turns around three times, like a figure skater doing, like, a double axel or something, and then it falls on the ground.
So much of Susan just being like, no, yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to go help do this. Ah! Oh, God! All of a sudden, my whole body is in pain, and I have forgotten how to move. Like, throughout the whole episode.
And that's, like, okay, I didn't really grasp the entire explaining what's going on in the plot thing. But I'm pretty sure at no point did they explain why she goes.
Because she starts stabbing people, and Ian
starts choking people,
and none of this has anything to do with what's wrong, and is never explained.
Nope.
Everything else gets covered, if kind of like, what? At least gets covered.
Yeah.
Right.
But that does not. They don't touch on that at all. They're just like, problem solved. Yeah, but why? Wait a sec.
If something's not in the ship, and something is not making people, try to kill other people, then why are they doing it?
And I mean, spoilers here, I guess. But the main explanation is the ship's doing it to save itself.
Yeah.
No.
The TARDIS is.
It's better than that. A button is stuck.
Yeah, but it's still the TARDIS affecting people to do things to solve this problem. But why is the TARDIS trying to kill everybody?
It really makes no sense.
But literally, there is a button, like that is like quick go back. Like that is what the button does. It very quickly takes you back.
it's written in pen. Fast return.
Fast return. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it's called. It's the fast return switch. They use it a lot in Doctor Who.
And it's stuck, so they're at the beginning of the universe because it's been stuck down the whole time that they've gone too far back.
They've gone to the beginning of the universe.
And that's the problem. The problem is they're at the beginning of the universe and it's breaking the TARDIS because a button is stuck.
Which I love that.
And then he explains it like, this is the educational portion of the program. Look at this flashlight, Susan. You see how I'm holding it down? It's not broken.
It's just not working properly. And then Susan is like, oh, thanks for explaining it.
It's like the end of Psycho. Where, like, if you see, like, Psycho, at the very end, like, the last, like, 5 minutes of Psycho is just, like, a doctor explaining how Norman Bates went insane. It's like that same thing, except it's like, a button broke, and this is like...
Instead of explaining why people went psycho, they explain the button problem.
This is actually one of those episodes that I think, like, the new series retroactively makes better. Because in the new series, they're like, yeah, the TARDIS is psychic. And they're like, yeah, the TARDIS just gets in your head and fucking messes with stuff.
Well, and that's something that I liked, was that Barbara says that. Barbara's like, you guys, I think the machine might be, like, trying to tell us something. And the doctor's like, the machine, the TARDIS can't think. That's dumb. You're dumb.
The doctor is the most contradictory person. He really is. I like the bit when he's like, where Barbara's like, I got an idea. And he's like, let's hear it. Anything could be useful at this point. And then she, like, says her idea. And he's like, no. Why did you even listen? You just immediately shoot it down.
I think my favorite part about these two episodes is how 100% done with the Doctor shit Barbara is.
Like, yes.
She starts the episode 100% done with him and ends the episode 200% done with him.
This was actually a really good episode for Barbara.
It is.
It was. She hasn't had much to do yet, which is why I was so excited when, like, everyone else has passed out. And I'm like, Barbara's the only one awake. She's probably going to do something. I'm so excited. And then she did. She basically solves everything.
Even if it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, she does solve it.
One of the things we haven't talked about is how the doctor basically threatens to throw Ian and Barbara off the ship.
Because he thinks they're sabotaging.
Yeah.
Which, how would they even know how to sabotage it? Which is what they basically say.
And if anyone's going to sabotage the ship, it was the doctor. He did it in the last episode. He did it in the very last episode so he could go explore a city and give everyone radiation poisoning.
So he thinks that Ian and Barbara are purposely sabotaging the ship so that they'll take him home?
Yeah, that's it. Like, that's the thing. Which is, like, reasonable. He's, like, so mad. Like, you're trying to blackmail me to, like, take you home. Like, because I kidnapped you. how dare, why are you guys so angry about me for kidnapping you and getting you lost in space forever?
He literally says, like, Barbara's getting more and more pissed because she's the most reasonable person in the show. And the doctor's like, whoa, hang on a second. Try and see things from my perspective. I let you guys on my ship and now shit starts fucking up. And it's like, that is not what happened. That is not how any of that went down at all.
And the best part is that, like later, it turns out that, like, the reason he was pressing the fast return switch was he was trying to go back to Earth. Like, he says, like, I was trying to go back to Earth, you know, but not like the way you assholes wanted to do it. You know? in my super cool way.
With more science.
There is actually one thing about this episode. I mean, there's a lot of things about this episode that I like. But there is one thing about this episode that I like, that I love what they do in Doctor Who, and they do it in the new series, like, every once in a while. And I think it's a thing that, like, in terms of genre shows, Doctor Who does really well, is this one, like, little speech where the Doctor just gives this whole speech about the beginning of time and, like, a star being born and, like, a solar system forming. And, like, it's just, like, a thing that every once in a while the Doctor does. And I actually really like that.
He gets so excited when they figure out that they're at the beginning of... They're at the beginning... It's not the universe. It's, like, it's, like, a galaxy, right?
So, yeah.
Or specifically the Milky Way, because he was trying to get to Earth, I assume.
Yeah, I guess.
But, yeah, they're at the beginning, and he's, like, describing what it's like when a galaxy is born, and he gets so excited, and he's so cute when he does it that you almost forget that he tried to kill Ian and Barbara because he's dumb.
And he did poison them. Or not poison them, he drugged them.
Oh, he did!
He drugged them.
And Ian is like, I thought so!
Yes. At least it wasn't anything worse. What? No, he straight up drugged you.
He drugged you and giggled about it. And then tried to kick you out of the ship.
He drugged
you? And you were too drugged at that
point. Super unsubtly, too.
He does that! Last episode, like the Daleks, he's like, unsubtly sabotages the ship. This episode, he unsubtly is like, oh, I'm angry at all of you! Beverage? Yes!
He really does. That's exactly how it goes down. He's just like so fucking mad. Like, you know what? It's okay. It's fine. Drink this.
No wonder Ian tried to choke him.
Yes.
But Ian gets over all of this very quickly and is like amused by it. Like, oh, that's the Doctor. He just does that. He'll just slip you sleeping pills and try to push you out into space. But you should really apologize to Barbara because she's very angry. And then he doesn't really give a proper apology.
No, he doesn't.
No, not really.
He gives something that's kind of approximate to an apology, which basically Barbara figures everything out and is still mad because, like I said, she's the only reasonable person. She's still mad and he's like, you should really apologize to her. Like, you really pissed her off when you tried to kill her. And literally he says, I could see how when I was threatening to throw you guys out of the ship, how that could have hurt you. that's the apology that he gives. And then he's like, also, you're smarter than I thought, so congratulations.
Let's go play in the snow.
Which was really cute. I'm glad they got to play in the snow.
That's, isn't that what we all want? We all want to have, like, a really hard day, and then go out and play in the snow.
Okay, so now let's get to the stuff that I don't
get.
So, like, okay, that they're fighting and stuff, and then they all stop and scream at the clock.
Okay, yeah. This was the thing that earlier when we were like, they're like, every once in a while someone just points and yells at a thing, and we don't know why. I think, like...
And it's normally Susan. It's normally, like, Susan was, like, just walking from one point to another point. And just screams and collapses. And you're like, oh god, what? And then everyone else starts reacting like something bad has happened. And you're like, oh god, what? But this time it was Barbara.
Everyone, even Barbara, normally, the sensible one, in this, like, when they hit the clock, she, like, collapses onto the chair. She's just like, oh no, the clock! It's all melty or something.
And then, like, he looks at his watch and, like, it's blurry. But I couldn't tell if it was I guess it was melted. But I was like, what the hell is going on? I don't understand.
Your clocks are melting. That seems like kind of a problem.
Did Salvador Dali write this episode?
Like, with all things considered, like, the clocks are kind of melty. That's the least scary thing that's happened. Which, I mean, I need to, like, go back and watch more First Doctor. I think it's kind of weird because I don't remember if that clock is always there.
I don't think
I've seen it, no.
No.
I don't think that clock is always there. So, like, I mean, I'll give them this. A clock appeared out of thin air.
To be fair, I don't think we had ever seen this portion of the room before. Because, like, they go into other rooms and stuff.
That's something that gets me, though, is that the clocks have all melted and, like, Ian has his watch and he, like, throws it or whatever. Or somebody throws a watch. But Ian's like... I guess it's time for bed, not that we'd know. Would they know?
You're in a time machine.
Time is pretty much meaningless. Like, unless you have a watch and keep it on you, but even then...
I mean, I guess you want to keep
your
internal clock going so that you know when to take a nap.
I imagine, like, yeah, if you're on the TARDIS, your internal clock gets fucked anyway.
Yeah.
I've wondered a lot about sleeping on the TARDIS and who sleeps and how much they sleep.
See, because I think the Doctor doesn't sleep.
But we do have really cool pull-out beds. Like, no, the Doctor does sleep.
He sleeps a lot now.
Well, I remember there's a second Doctor episode where they're trying to solve the plot, and they're trying to get the Doctor involved, and he's just like, no, I'm taking a nap. I'm really tired. They're like, but Doctor, we have to fit. No, nap. And he takes a nap. He just straight up sleeps.
Well, then two's my favorite Doctor.
He just does not give any shits about the plot. It is bedtime.
It is nap time.
But see, that's what I feel like. He sleeps like we eat. Where he's like, it's been a week. I probably need to take a nap. Oops.
Is that how you eat?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a week.
Well, I probably eat something. Normally I'm like, it is 11 o'clock at night and I have not eaten today. Oops. I need to eat to live. I forget.
Yeah, I think it is something like that.
Then
yeah.
I think, like, Time Lords probably sleep regularly-ish. I think they sleep less. But I feel like the Doctor frequently is like,
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think, like, he sort of, like, does, like, that whole, like, I'm going to do, like, an hour nap, and then that's it. And then that'll serve me for a while.
So now we need to talk about what happened? What happens?
Oh, wait, okay, yeah, so the clocks are melted.
Right.
And that means that time was taken from them?
Yeah.
But then time was given back, and that's, how they figured out that the button...
And there's photos.
Yes, there's photos.
And the doors open on good planets, close on bad planets.
I love that one bit where, like, where they're like, hey, look, that looks like Earth. And, like, the Doctor's like, actually, no, that's a photo. And I'm like, shh, don't tell anybody. This is the BBC. We don't have a lot of money.
That did confuse me at first. Like, of course it's a photo. I'm confused. Why wouldn't it be?
I just don't understand what happened. And there's the fault indicator, which the first three times the Doctor said it, I swore he was saying fornicator. I was very confused.
Like, yeah, apparently it's a big wall of lights, and then when something goes wrong, a light bulb lights up. After the first Doctor, we never see that again. Because that's a horribly inefficient system.
As explained by the flashlight metaphor.
Exactly.
But, like, I guess all of the lights were on, and so the whole ship was just going to fall apart.
Yeah, that was his thing. It's like, all the lights are on. Well, we're fucked. that was, like, exactly it.
I get that the button was stuck, blah, blah, blah. They went back too far, blah, blah, blah. But I did not see the connection between melting clocks and whatever, the pictures and the doors opening and closing. I didn't see the connection between those two things. I don't know how they got from point A to point B.
I'll say, as a seasoned Doctor Who fan, makes no sense. There's no good reason. I don't know either. When I watched it, I was trying to figure that out too. Like, as far as like my best explanation is that TARDISes be crazy.
When I was watching it, it was like Batman and Robin trying to solve the Riddler's puzzle in the Batman the movie, the 60s movie. But that made more sense than what I just witnessed on Doctor Who.
I'm starting to get kind of used to, like, okay, yeah, sure. This thing happened because this thing happened because you said so. Why not? At least there was adorable snowball fights and Ian in that coat that was way too big for him. And Ian ever so groggily trying to, like, fix everything and help everyone, but just being a big goofball.
And
I love his laugh at the very end where it's like... It's like, well, I don't know what we're doing now. And then, like, Ian just, like, laughs his big goofy laugh. Like, ha, 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 we're fucked.
We're so fucked.
I even liked Susan with the scissors. Even though it had no connection whatsoever to anything.
There was no reason for her to be stabbing people.
I think it's because, at one point, she's just, stabbing the bed. And I think it's just because she hates that bed, because it's a terrible bed.
It looks really uncomfortable.
It really does. Just fuck this bed. It must die.
I've slept on this thing so many nights.
Which I was really excited when they were like, go, lay her down. And I was like, we're going to see bedrooms. And then they, pulled out this
hideaway bed.
Well, and it's shaped, though, like a chair.
It is. It's like a horizontal chair.
It's like a really uncomfortable looking shoe.
But I have this theory that the TARDIS right now is very small. Well, right now it's as little because it's still a baby. And so it's mostly the control room and maybe a few other things.
With a water and milk dispenser.
With a water and milk dispenser.
That was another thing I forgot. I know they explained it, but I've never quite figured out what was wrong with the water thing.
Oh, I don't know.
Because here's what happens. They press a water button and then water comes out and they're like, what?
Twice. Two different people do it.
But I think the light lighting up was supposed to be empty. And then they're oh, but it's still giving us water. Huh.
No, yeah, because someone says something about it later on to that effect.
They're like, it says it's empty, but it gives us water anyway. Which could be the button stuck. It's not broken, but it's still causing a bad thing to happen.
Yeah.
I guess.
I also love the method that the TARDIS gives out water. It's in these little plastic bags.
That there's a big button labeled water that you have to hit it and then you get a little plastic bag.
Okay, but here's the thing. So you press the button. If it lights up, it means empty. But then it gives water anyway. But, okay, I'm fine with Susan knowing that. But Ian...
I imagine they've been on there for a while, though.
Yeah, but yeah. Ian seems to have amnesia. So why does he know that?
I mean, I think the amnesia wears off. Because everybody wakes up and is like, who the hell are you? And then they're like, all right, I know who you are. We're good.
Yeah.
But I'm still very confused.
Yeah, they seemed like after a while, they're like, yeah, okay. We're on the TARDIS. That's right. Don't know what's going on.
Still don't.
And also, Susan just went crazy. And her hair is huge. At one point, her hair is three sizes too big.
And she does this squinty eye thing to indicate evil. I'm on to you, those eyes say.
So this episode is something that was written as filler.
Yeah, they needed to pad out the season. So they quickly wrote these two episodes so that they could have 13 episodes or something. I don't remember what it said.
So, I mean, it feels very much like the first episode was written and then they're like, okay, so what is it?
It's a button. It's a stuck button.
And no one ever went back and said, wait. Okay, but what about everything else?
It doesn't matter. That was a week ago. They'll have forgotten by now.
I'm going to say, right now, it's sort of interesting, right now, because I'm in a grad program where we're writing a two-part television episode story. That makes so much more sense to me now. You're working on episode two, and they're like, does this make sense with episode one anymore? I don't know. Because, stuff changes, and then, I hope maybe we'll fix it. Maybe we'll go back and fix episode one, or not.
Well, see, and now that makes me wonder if there was, supposed to be something in the ship, and they were like, hang on now, that sounds expensive.
Right. We only have the TARDIS for this.
It has to be something in the TARDIS. What if it's a button?
And it's so, last minute that they literally scribble and pin. Fast return!
That's what I love. Because, they clearly came up with that right then and there. I don't think they've mentioned the fast return before that point. But, like I said, they end up using the fast return switch a lot.
Is it so clearly labeled in the future?
I don't think anyone ever, looks closely at it again. They're just like, yeah, there is a fast return switch. That's just one of the things that the TARDIS does. Which I love because it was clearly, I love, when things that happen that were, quick fix solutions or, last minute ideas suddenly become really important. That's one of my favorite things that happens in, long form kind of serialized storytelling is that we were like, oh, this is just this random thing. And then suddenly now this is the most important thing.
And not the fault indicator.
Not the fault indicator. Which went away.
And the milk and water dispenser.
Yes, the milk and water dispenser.
I imagine at some point, like, someone is like, really? That's kind of sci-fi. And, like, the doctor gets embarrassed by it and just starts buying it in jugs.
I like that they acknowledge that people have to live on the TARDIS, though. And there has to be, like, food and water and stuff.
I always want to see, like, the kitchen and, like, the living parts of the TARDIS. Like, yeah. I want to see people's messy bedrooms.
Yes, I do too.
Well, clearly there's not kitchens, though. There's
there's just food dispensing machines.
Yeah, food and liquid dispensers.
That dispense sticks of butter that taste like food.
That taste like bacon and eggs.
My theory is that, like, Time Lords don't super need... Like, yeah, like, I don't think Time Lords sleep that much and don't eat as much.
Or they need to be reminded. Because they're... You haven't listened to the last podcast. But there's a bit where they get... bacon and eggs, and Ian's like, I'm hungry, and the doctor's like, oh right, food, and then goes and starts eating without giving any to Ian, and he's like, oh right, you need food. Yeah. Sorry, I'm selfish. So.
No, but like, I think that's how it worked. That's like sort of my kind of thought for like how like the doctor's arc went, was that at the beginning, like, he doesn't really get how human beings work, so he's just like, yeah, like, oh crap, you guys need, like, after the first day, it was like, crap, you need water, right? Okay, here's this water machine.
You need it, like every day.
Yes, and you're a mammal, too, so I put some milk in there.
I like that that's, like, the only two options you can clearly read.
It's a giant machine with two buttons.
Milk and water.
I think, I do like the idea that maybe he just, like, built it, like, ah, crap, what do people need?
My question
is... How do I build something so that they won't talk to me?
My question
is... He's like
is,
someone who just adopted a cat. They're like, crap, we need to buy cat shit now. We gotta go... I gotta go buy, humans go to the bathroom. Crap, I gotta buy a litter box.
He's like someone who just kidnapped a cat from its home planet.
Where does the milk come from?
There is a joke about that.
Is there?
In New Who. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, yeah, that's way in the future. That's more than Joe, Joe has seen.
Super in the future, and it's a joke, but, Rose asks how long they can, or no, the doctor asks, like, we always end up on Earth. He's like, the universe is like infinite, and I swear to God, we end up on Earth like every week. And Rose is like, well, mostly, so like, we have to pick up milk. The doctor says, all the species on all the planets, and it has to come from a cow. Something like that. Ish.
Yeah. Oh, I was actually thinking of a different thing that was even later. But
yeah. Oh, no, there is a different joke.
Well, I was more thinking of like, I was thinking of something, the thing from Asylum of the Daleks, where that was a whole like running plot point.
We haven't, I don't think either one of us have seen that.
No.
Okay, well, yeah, there's a whole running plot point. Well, then I won't talk about it, about where milk comes from. It makes more sense when you see it. But anyway.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was cow milk or if it was like alien milk or what it was. Because it's watered milk. Milk's gotta come from something, right?
No.
I think the TARDIS probably like, cause like, yeah, like that's my theory is that, like, the doctor's like, crap, you need milk. And the TARDIS probably synthesized like human milk. and then people were like, no, ew. Like, cow milk. And then the doctor was like, what?
Cow
no,
milk?
Ew.
That doesn't even make sense. That's the best.
You need human milk from a boob. You're humans.
What if it's TARDIS milk?
It's TARDIS milk.
TARDIS is a living thing. And it's female.
The TARDIS is organic, right?
Yeah. So it might, and there
because
might be a TARDIS
teat.
I
feel like that hasn't been established yet as
no.
an idea. In
oh
the
no,
show.
No, like because yeah.
like I'm pretty sure the doctor just straight up says it's a machine.
Yeah, because yeah, Barbara's like the TARDIS is trying to tell us that it's broken, and the doctor's like, "That's dumb. You're dumb."
Yes. Yeah, no, yeah, it's like, they clearly don't think, like, yeah, this is like the first rumbling of the idea that maybe the TARDIS is alive.
Technically, the first was Ian saying it
it's
in the first
alive.
Episode because it vibrates.
Like, and this is the episode that confirms that theory, and Ian has nothing to say about it.
No, at one point he does say the controls are alive.
Does he?
He does. You have to go back and find it. It's at the beginning of episode 2.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Ian thinks things are alive.
Except the one time he didn't.
I do like the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is actually one of the better cliffhangers on Doctor Who. Doctor Who cliffhangers range from like pretty good to like really dumb.
You talking about the choke or the...
The choke, yeah. The choke.
Where it's where Ian chokes the Doctor. You don't know who's choking the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. And then it's Ian, and you're like, why is it Ian? And the show's like,
We need a cliffhanger.
Yeah, that's how it works on Doctor Who. It's literally just, well, we need a cliffhanger.
The best cliffhanger that's happened so far, for me, was the introduction of the Daleks.
The Daleks with the plunger. The
plunger and Barbara screams.
That was really scary.
Yeah, like, that's pretty good.
What is the end of, how does this end? I don't remember.
The cliffhanger for this one isn't much of a, they go out in the snow and it's like, it's a giant footprint in the snow!
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And Susan manages to not scream at it.
Yeah. Spoilers, I'm pretty sure it's nothing alien or anything. The next serial is Marco Polo. So, I don't know what that footprint could be.
It probably never comes up again.
They forget about it. I haven't seen Marco Polo, so I cannot confirm nor deny that.
I saw it a long time ago. It's going to be our first serial that does not exist. It's 7 episodes, and none of them, all of them were destroyed.
That sounds fun.
So.
That sounds hard to watch.
We'll be watching Reconstructions. We're going to have a guest on that one as well.
Are we?
And it's going to be Ray Friesen.
Oh, that should be fun.
DontEatAnyBugs.com. Com. No, RayFriesen.com. He changed his website.
Ah.
RayFriesen.com is probably easier to remember than DontEatAnyBugs.com.
Is it?
But yeah.
Are you having trouble saying .com?
Yes, I keep saying .com. I'm a little sick. But yeah, he said he knows a lot about Marco Polo and all that stuff. He's been watching the Netflix show. So he's like, I'm an expert.
so he just knows a lot about, not like the serial, but about Marco Polo in general.
Yes.
And presumably like the Explorer. And not the children's game.
Well, I didn't clarify. So.
And it is Ray.
What if that was what the Netflix show, it's a Netflix show. What is what that show was? It was like, it's not a narrative show. It's just people playing Marco Polo and that's the show.
No, like.
I would probably watch that.
High stakes Marco Polo.
Oh yeah. No, of course it's on TV.
Yeah.
It's high stakes, Marco Polo.
I mean, that's what all game shows are. Like, I mean, that's what they've started doing is just like, let's take this children's game and make it more exciting. Like, you know.
I mean, that's what it always was. Like, I mean, like, what Wheel of Fortune is just, like, more exciting Hangman. Hollywood Squares was just tic-tac-toe, but with drunk famous people.
I'm reading your notes and... There are, like, a couple of times where it says, none of this makes sense.
It doesn't make sense.
And yet it's the best episode so far?
Yeah.
And here's, you know why it is?
Tell us.
Because it does a thing that didn't get to happen enough in Classic Who, where it's like a character drama about the main characters.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah, that's one thing that rarely gets to happen in Doctor Who, because they're, like, all going out and having adventures. And getting separated, and oh, William Hartnell's sick, so the Doctor took a nap. And then, like, you know, let's go hang out with the Aztecs and, you know, learn about the Aztecs.
One of the things I mentioned last episode was that there was this plot line that almost, like, it seemed like something got cut between Barbara and that one Thal whose pants she's totally wearing in this episode. And they're like, it's like, they're a little bit at the beginning of the episode, and they're a little bit at the end of the episode. It frustrated me so much, because I was like, whatever happened there was infinitely more interesting than watching them walk through caves. And I would have much preferred to have seen that than, okay, jump across, okay, now you jump across, okay, now you also jump across. And I think that's something that made this episode so good, was that even though none of it made any sense, we did just get to see everyone interacting, and that was, like, the bulk of the serial.
Yeah.
It's just how people dealt with each other.
It kind of reminded me a bit of, like, Farscape, in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of everybody stuck on the ship together, and none of them really like each other.
They will soon.
Yeah. And, of course, there was the additional bit where they're like, let's put the bandage on the Doc's head, and once it goes white, the dock is okay, and it made us think of When the Blood Runs Clear.
When the Blood Runs Clear.
Oh, yeah.
In that it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense.
Not needed.
Let's establish a science thing that'll make everyone go, why?
It just gives the doc a headband for the rest of the episode.
It does. A little changing headband like he's Rorschach from frickin' Watchmen. I don't know. I will say about that thing that she unrolls, like that bandage with like the little marks on it, it may just be the crappy version that I was watching, but it looked like she unrolled a bunch of condoms.
It was not. It definitely looked like that. I was like, what are you doing with those? And do they have nothing better? Because I would hope, given Time Lord technology, you could come up with something better than rubbers. I'm just saying.
Yes. Time Lord reproduction is a whole can of worms. Literally, they fuck in a can of worms. No.
I thought they were looms. That's a thing that I've heard.
Looms are very controversial.
Looms are a thing that I have heard of.
I mean, then also prick his finger and then make a daughter. That happened one time.
That did happen one time.
That was cloning.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it still counts.
Also, you can apparently just grow a new you.
Yeah, just chop off a limb.
Yeah, chop off a hand. Do it just right. You could just grow a new you. But no, okay, yeah, looms. I can, like, okay. Basically, in a spin-off novel, they established the idea that, like, sort of, like, Time Lord biology has been so messed with that they couldn't really reproduce properly, like the way they used to reproduce, whatever that was. Like, there were certain, like, Time Lord, like, family groups, houses. Time Lords are, like, loomed in these machines, and they come out as, you know, Time Lords.
Well, now, isn't there also this, like, there are Time Lords, but then there are also just Gallifreyans?
Yeah, not all Gallifreyans are Time Lords. Like, yeah. And that you don't necessarily even have to be Gallifreyan to be a Time Lord. That, like, and part of it is, like, being exposed to, like, the Time Vortex or something. But, like, yeah, presumably there are other Gallifreyans on Gallifrey that are just regular people. I'm not sure if that's what Susan is. I've always kind of assumed that's what Susan is.
That makes me think about the conversation we had about names earlier. Because it seems like Time Lords all have titles.
Most of them don't have titles.
Because Romana's a Time Lady, right?
Yeah, and she doesn't have a title. She has a name. Lots of them have names. Like, there's only a few that have titles. My theory about this has always been that the Doctor did it, and then everyone was like, that's really cool, I'm gonna do that too.
No, I don't buy that at all. Because in reality, it's like the Master did it, and the Doctor was like, oh, that's cool. I want a name too. I don't buy the Doctor being a trendsetter.
I don't know, like, it depends. I mean, that, like, it kind of, it's like who left first. I could see the Master. To me, I think it works the other way, because I also, like, buy the Doctor running off, calling himself the Doctor, which I think that's the sort of pompous thing he would do. And then the Master being like, the Doctor did that, I'm gonna do that, but better. Because the Master is totally obsessed with the Doctor. It's very much kind of like one-up, like, oh yeah, you're gonna do that, I'm gonna do this thing. And then it starts a trend.
But technically, like, if you think of them as degrees, the Doctor is still higher.
Yes.
Which is why I think it happened the other way around. You're gonna be a Master? I'm gonna be a Doctor. Suck it, Master.
That is an interesting thing, that, like, because, like, any other title isn't, like, an academic title.
So wait, what Gallifreyans do we know the names of?
Well, like, Rassilon, what's the one? There's a Gallifreyan who travels with four?
That's Romana.
What's her? No.
Well, I mean, Romana's Gallifreyan, though, right?
Yeah, Romana. It's your...
Okay. There's Romana, but there's somebody who's just a Gallifreyan.
No, I think you're thinking of Leela, but Leela's not a Gallifreyan.
Oh.
Leela's not a
Gallifreyan. Okay, but still, here's my thing.
Then I don't know.
Those are all very alien-sounding names. Why Susan?
I'm assuming Susan is a cover.
But they never let it go.
Yeah, I think she got used to, I don't know. I know there's like one version of like the backstory where her name is like Archaeator or something, and then she changed it to Susan, and they just kind of kept it up. But I don't, like, I think that's from like a novel or something.
Well, I mean, clearly Foreman is a cover because it's the name of the junkyard.
Although I could see Susan just being like, it's Susan now, Grandpa.
Yeah, I could see like, Susan getting really into
just in like a moody teenager way.
She very much is a moody. The whole episode, she's even like, she's acting like a crazy person, like stabbing people. But, like, her version of a crazy person is also a very moody teenager. She's just, like, a lot of sulking around, like, oh, you guys are talking about me, whatever. I'm gonna go grab these scissors. You know?
And stab a bed couch.
Yeah, it's very much like that.
Okay, but we're talking about reproduction of Time Lords and stuff. I mean, she's the Doctor's granddaughter. How does that work?
Exactly. How does that work? Is she really his granddaughter? Are they, like, lying? Yeah, that's kind of the thing about, like, basically what it is that looms was a thing that happened in these novels that came out after the show ended. And then for a long time, that was, like, it. And that was, like, the only thing that people had. And the idea was that, like the granddaughter thing was just, like, a cover thing, like Susan. Like, the name Susan. Like, that whole thing was, like, a cover. But then, like, when the show came back, there was a lot of, like, explicit references to, like, him being a kid and, like, having an actual family.
He says that he was a dad once.
Yeah, he says that he's a dad once.
Doesn't he have, like, a crib? And it's, like, his crib?
Yeah, he's got a crib at one point. We see his crib at one point. Clearly, like, as far as New Who is concerned, they're Time Lord babies.
You can loom a baby.
Well, it's probably because, you know, that with the introduction of sort of more romance, they're like, yeah. Well, he's got to fuck.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like there's a way to reconcile. And, like, the thing about Doctor Who canon is that there isn't one.
That's my favorite part about it. Headcanon is canon.
Exactly. Like, the whole point of Doctor Who is, like, there's every single Doctor Who thing you read or see or watch or listen to, like, is true in a certain timeline. Like, that's how it works. It's just sort of like stuff is getting rewritten all the time, you know. Maybe there were looms and that got rewritten and now there's not looms.
Maybe the Doctor does have one heart at this point.
Yeah.
Or maybe Ian just doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, that was the thing. Like, when they said, like, his heart's fine. Like, when they wrote that, yeah, he just has one heart. Like, everyone was certain that he had one heart. And it's sort of funny that, like, because you mentioned that earlier, like, there was a whole bunch of theories where, like, people were trying to work around that.
This is my favorite game.
Yeah, where people were like, maybe, like, in the first incarnation of a Time Lord, they have one heart, but then when they regenerate, they get a second heart or something. And they were like, or they had all these weird theories. But, like, you, Joe, personally hit upon the theory that I've always had, which is this: Ian's a dumbass.
Right. Like, I mean, and it makes sense even in context of the show because he's like
Dave.
Loopy.
Yeah.
So and doesn't be, like, understand what makes things alive.
He's, there's also the bit where he's like looking at that monitor and it like fades in and out of focus.
Yeah.
So maybe like he's listening and he's like, I hear two heartbeats. I'm not telling him that. I'm clearly perceiving things weird.
That's not logical, and I will not admit to having experienced it.
He's double alive!
He's double. Like, it's another thing where, like, because the show isn't set yet, there's a bit where, like, an alarm goes off where, like, if it was now, that would be the cloister bell.
That would be bells, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, we don't have the cloister bell yet, so it's this random noise.
I remember it happening, and was weirdly... Like, it was off-putting, because I was like, the hell is that? And it's like suddenly having an old cell phone.
Yeah.
The background is different, all of the notification sounds are embarrassing now, which I assume is how the TARDIS works.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it works.
It's not a spaceship, it's a cell phone.
Yes.
Yes. A cell phone that travels in space and time.
Well, I mean, it definitely is a phone box. So.
Yeah. There's another really great joke about that later.
There is something that, like, in this episode and the past couple of episodes, the Doctor gets hurt a lot. And every time Susan is like, oh my god! Because that's what Susan does. And, like, this episode I was like, well, it can't be that bad because he's not regenerating. So maybe calm down. Which obviously isn't even, like, an idea for anyone yet. But it is interesting to think about it. Like, in the context of, okay, but actually in this universe, she does know that, and it is a thing.
That, I mean, even when he regenerated the first time, I don't think they knew about regeneration.
No, they didn't. They didn't even call it regeneration until, like, when the third Doctor regenerated.
Yeah, like, it had something to do, like, in that episode, the idea was something to do with, there was, like, some radiation or something in that serial, the Cyberman thing. And there was, like, some sort of, like, explanation for why he changed or whatever. But it wasn't regeneration.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't, like, a thing. And then, like, when the second Doctor regenerates, the Time Lords are just like, you've changed your face before. we could do it again. Like, that's, like, basically what happens. So, yeah, and it wasn't until, like, yeah, the third Doctor's regeneration where, like, suddenly, like, okay, it's got a name now. Yeah.
One, the third Doctor's was, like, forced, wasn't it?
No, the second Doctor's was forced.
Oh, it was two to three.
Okay. Two to three was forced, like, three to four was, yeah, a different thing.
But, like, one to two is ambiguous.
Yeah.
Something weird happened, and now my face is all different.
Yep.
Pretty much.
That's exactly what happened.
What is weird, though, is that the Doctor has had to regenerate before by radiation poisoning, which there is totally a cure for in the Daleks.
Radiation gloves.
Drugs.
That's by far still my favorite blooper. Anti-radiation gloves.
So what's great is he spends, like, forever moping about it, and not once thinks, oh, maybe I should go and get some anti-radiation drugs.
Yes.
From the Thals on Skaro.
I was going to say, to be fair, it is on Skaro, and Skaro's all stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe that's the only place it existed.
Yeah. That's the only place anyone ever solved the problem of radiation. There's nowhere else.
These sexy supermodels on Skaro. I feel like we're about ready to wrap this up.
Yeah, it seems like this was the end of it. I don't know if there's enough stuff for a podcast.
Well, we've been talking
for an hour and 12 minutes.
So we probably have like 30 minutes of usable.
I was going to say, like, yeah, we've been talking for an hour, but not all of that was usable.
But to be fair, this is a really short serial.
This is a really short serial, so there is less to talk about.
It'll be a short, there's less to talk about, less happened.
Yeah, I mean, we did a 4-episode and then a 7-episode, and this is 2. But thanks for joining us on this podcast, Sir Cherry, Sir Christopher Cherry.
Oh, sure, definitely. I hope to do it again.
I think it went well, right?
Yeah. I think it went pretty okay. I feel good about it.
That's
all right. Oh, yeah. I thought about Doctor Who. That's the thing I do. yeah, I had made a lot of claims about my Doctor Who knowledge and then, like, fumbled a bit. So that's good.
Is there any parting words you wish to part?
Okay, this is what it is. I think, like, looking at my notes, I just realized that, like, there's this really great moment in the episode that I think sums up the episode. And I think it sums up, like, Doctor Who in general. Barbara makes a suggestion of, like, maybe this thing is happening. But Ian's like, that's not very logical. And then Barbara goes, does it have to be? And I feel like if that sums up Classic Who.
At that point, I turned to Joe and said, see, Barbara knows what's up. Which I said 4 or 5 times during the episode.
Yeah. So that's my parting words. It's not very logical, but does it have to be?
That's beautiful.
No.
All right, well, that's me with Doctor Who.
Stick with us for the next episode, in which we will be reviewing, I don't know, is this really reviewing? We'll be talking about Marco Polo and our first Reconstruction serial.
I'm worried about that.
It'll be fine. It'll be fun.
I'm bored thinking about it.
You're bored thinking. It is 7 episodes where we won't be able to see people moving.
Yay!
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Watchathon of Rassilon on October. Thanks.